Hi, welcome to Indiana Weekend with John Strauss. This is a kind of radio magazine show about the interesting places and intriguing people in our part of the state. We get out of the studio and onto the road to find the kind of radio you don't hear so much anymore. Stories off the beaten path and usually away from the top headlines. By the way, be sure and drop us a note or, and this is new, send us a short audio clip telling us what's on your mind, what's going on for the summer, your favorite vacation story, that kind of thing. Just use a smartphone or a digital recorder and send the file, or just a note if you'd rather, to our email address at indianaweekend@gmail.com. Coming up today, a visit with Woody Noblett about the East Washington neighborhood in Muncie. But first, the team from Lafayette won. Muncie didn't do too badly, but still scored lower than Hammond and Jeffersonville, which came in second and third. It sounds like a roundup of state football scores, but that's how those cities' police departments did in the Indiana SWAT Challenge recently. There's a national competition in Orlando in November. The Indiana version featured 17 teams competing on a grueling obstacle course that also tests marksmanship along with physical ability. The contest is sponsored by the Delaware County Sheriff's Department, and Corporal Tony Skinner is the event coordinator. We talked under a tent out on the windy course after the competition was over.
What we do is we force them to compete and really try to excel in events, and we take them out of their comfort level. We make them, you know, run distances, run over hills. We make them drag really heavy objects. We make them run through the creek, and then we make them go in, put their gas mask on, and shoot small precision targets with a really elevated heart rate. So it really forces them to stay focused and composed, which, you know, in a real call out or a real life situation, you're going to be forced to do. You know, law enforcement's different than the military in the respect that every shot that comes out of our guns, we're accountable for. You know, we can't just go in spraying. So that's one way that events like this really help guys.
Are there things here that serve to kind of replicate what a real life experience is like?
Sure, I'll give you an example. The obstacle course that we built. We built this obstacle course especially for this Indiana SWAT Challenge 6 years ago. In the obstacle course, we've got ropes they have to climb, which quite frequently happens in different call-outs, ladders they have to climb, rope walls. We've got one event called the attic window, where it's a flat panel with a hole in it that replicates an attic window where a guy might have to jump in there. So a lot of our events actually duplicate real-life scenarios that we've either had ourselves or that we've heard about or read about that other departments have went through.
Do Indiana SWAT teams go on and compete at other levels, Midwest or regional or anything
sure
like that?
Sure, they do. There's a lot of teams here that in November they'll go down and compete in the SWAT Roundup in Orlando, Florida. And that's, to me, that's probably the biggest SWAT competition in the country. There's like 60 teams that compete in that, and they have a lot of international teams that compete in that also.
What is it that, if you were looking at a team, and Lafayette did real well this year?
Right, Lafayette, we had a new team to compete this year, Rochester, Hammond, Jeffersonville, Muncie did great. All those guys were up each event at the top of the order.
What makes it, is it just the athleticism of the officers? Is it, they must train a heck of a lot themselves, right?
Right. A lot of these guys, I don't know how much extra they train for, specifically for this event. I know some of them do. They'll come out and run the obstacle course time and time and time again just to get familiar with it. I'm going to tell you, the second you think you've got it down and you think that your training is good enough and that you can put it on cruise control is the second somebody's going to get hurt or they're going to get killed. You have to always strive to be the best that you can be, to always be better than that bad guy. You know, those guys are training in prison. They're training in night and day in basements just to do harm to us. And that's not something we're prepared to accept. So these guys are out here training, you know, daily, weekly, or monthly. They're running, they're doing PT, they're lifting weights. And like I said, a lot of these guys are doing firearms training even on their own, where they go out and it's not the number of rounds that you shoot, but it's the quality of the rounds that you shoot. You know, if you have to, you know, shoot a hostage taker, which some of our targets are like hostage takers, you only get a sliver of somebody's head. And the full hostage.
In the middle is the hostage, right?
Right, exactly right. So, you know, they have to be able to take that precision shot, either with a handgun or a long gun or a sniper rifle, and they may only get one shot at it. So
that must be about the scariest thing you have to do.
Yeah.
The idea that you're trying to get the bad guy, but if you're off a little bit.
Yeah, you're going to take out an innocent, you know, and that's what we train for. No, none of us ever wants to have to go to sleep at night knowing that we shot an innocent person.
Are there more call-outs than there used to be?
In my career, I've been a deputy sheriff for 17 years. I haven't noticed an increased number of call-outs. I have noticed an increased number of our call-outs are drug-related, and with drugs comes violence. So, you know, with the pills and the meth and the cocaine so readily available, the intensity of the call-outs seems to have amped up slightly over the years.
But
the actual number of call-outs at least in our jurisdiction, hasn't really increased much.
Do these typically involve a person who's really high or, you know, impaired like that?
Not necessarily. In my career, I've realized that a portion of the people that sell them the dope, they don't like to get real high on their own stuff. They know how bad it is and, you know, what it does to people, but they're still the ones that are manufacturing it or selling it. So, you know, when we go into a house, you can expect to find, you know, drug paraphernalia or even, you know, maybe a meth lab. It may be something that, you know, we prepare and we train in this event where we make guys wear their gas mask. If they go into a meth lab or something, or to some kind of active chemical lab, the first thing they're going to do is gear up. You know, it's hazmat. So that's one thing that we do in this competition that prepares guys for the real life.
Are there more weapons now and more? It seems that whenever there's a big drug bust or something like that, there's always a big supply of weapons on hand as well. That's something you have to be thinking
sure.
about, I guess.
Absolutely. We're always prepared for the bad guys to be armed, and we're prepared for them to be armed with high-powered weapons. So, you know, speed, surprise, and extreme violence is, you know, it's what it's all about. We have to be prepared to take it to them harder and faster than they're prepared to take it to us.
Corporal Tony Skinner of the Delaware County Sheriff's Department talking about the competition among police SWAT teams from across the state recently held in Muncie. We see them on the news, but don't stop to think about the people behind the guns and gas masks. I thought you might want to meet one.
Indiana Weekend, real radio from just down the road. Look for that name on Facebook and drop us a line to let us know what you think at indianaweekend@gmail.com.
My name is Woody Noblet. I'm from Detroit. Both my wife and I met and married in Detroit area. I've been a minister for 40 years and actually 40 plus years now, and served four churches full time since 1971. And we came here to serve a church, as it turned out to be the last one I served full-time, in 2001. And I retired from that position in 2006. And I still do ministry, but I do it part-time. I have much more free time for other interests, and one of which is being involved in my neighborhood. We love it here, fortunately.
And we call this the East Washington?
Yeah, Emily Kimbrough District, is this immediate area. The larger area is kind of the east, I guess, east central.
And your home is about a 5-minute walk from the downtown.
That's right. Yeah. I'm less than 5 minutes from Madison Avenue, which is a main artery of downtown on the east side. Yeah.
You could imagine that there are probably people in suburbia who'd say, live downtown. I don't know about that. How did you, well, what was the calculus that you used to figure out that?
Well, first of all, we didn't listen to our real estate man, who was a very nice man, and I still see him from time to time and enjoy his company. But when we were driving by this house going from one suburb to another, if you get my drift, and my wife and I said, oh, wait, there's a for sale sign. What do you know about this house? And he immediately began to discourage us from even looking because of the neighborhood. And we didn't let that deter us. We said, no, we want to at least go in and look. And once we got in and looked, we were hooked, so to speak. And when he realized how strongly we felt about it, his rhetoric went down, and he ended up, you know, cooperating with us, of course, because it wasn't his decision. But we noticed that he wasn't the only real estate agent who discouraged people from moving, professional people especially. People who the real estate agents would recommend the Ball State immediate area or Yorktown, almost always in preference to this neighborhood.
How has this neighborhood changed in the time that you've lived here?
My wife and I, Glenda and I, have lived here 13 years. And it's been a slow movement, but there has been movement from multi-rentals and few single-family home ownerships to much more single-family home ownership and fewer rentals. You know, the single-family homeowners tend to keep their property up better. And so we like to see that change. There seems to be less of a drug and prostitution problem than there was.
You say that carefully.
Yeah.
What was it like when you got here?
Well, my wife, who is more aggressive than many women that I know, would walk with the prostitutes, and that really got under their skin because they didn't want anybody walking with them. You know, that was, of course, her way of discouraging them in the neighborhood. Sometimes they'd engage her in conversation, and she'd tell them that she wasn't trying to get them to quit doing what they're doing, although she disapproved of it, but she just didn't want them doing it on Washington Street. And she would also often call the police, and sometimes that was a deterrent. But either because of her efforts or other factors, there seems to be less street walking in our neighborhood and on our street. And it's hard to spot drug dealing, you know. I mean, it's not easy to spot prostitutes. Sometimes you think a woman walking down the street is a prostitute, and you have no evidence other than what she's wearing and her manner, but you don't know 100%, you know. And the same with drugs. We suspect there's certain houses still in the neighborhood that are dealing drugs. It's hard to really nail that down, but we have a number of people in the neighborhood who are really good watchdogs about that and cooperate with the police and other agencies in the neighborhood to identify and get rid of that. When we moved here 13 years ago, this house is on the market. Whenever you move into a community, you're at the mercy of the current housing market, what's on the market. We had been antique collectors for 30 years up to that point. This house was the only house, the first house we lived in that was older than we were. And it really showed off our antiques. This house was built in 1895. And when we walked in, we both looked at each other and said, this is it. With all the neighborhood problems, which have abated significantly in the last 13 years, as I've mentioned earlier, we love it here.
Is it getting easier to live in downtown than it was 13 years ago?
I think so. The Center for the Arts, which is a plus and minus as far as I'm concerned. The minus is it's a monstrosity of a building. It's like 8 stories high. But the plus is they're active, the Center for the Arts, and there are people there all the time. And they're doing positive, constructive things for families and children. And there are wedding receptions, and there are dramatic events, and dancing, and all kinds of positive things that are good for the community. So I let that override whatever architectural problems I have with the building. And I served on Muncie's Preservation Commission for 6 or 7 years. And so I saw a lot of things come before the commission, and I saw how it operated, and I saw a lot of improvement in the buildings, the facades of buildings, especially on Walnut Street and other places downtown. And people are moving into apartments that have been built for retirement, single people. I don't know that the apartments are attractive to families as much as they are to retirees and and single folk, but there's a lot of people living in apartments downtown above the businesses and restaurants.
Long ago, but not so very long ago, the world was different. Oh, yes, it was.
That's Woody Noblett, a minister and a resident for 13 years with his wife Glenda in the Emily Kimbrough Historic District on East Washington Street in Muncie. The folks over there just held the 37th annual Old Washington Street Festival and Historic Home Tour. Thought you'd want to hear from Woody on how things are going.
This is Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.
Muncie was recently the setting for the Indiana SWAT Challenge, kind of the state playoffs of special weapons and tactics teams. Lafayette came in first among the 17 teams competing in 2 days of events on an obstacle course. The competition includes shooting exercises that simulate, with the stress of competing on the obstacle course, the pulse-pounding critical moments of a hostage situation, for example. Corporal Tony Skinner of the Delaware County Sheriff's Department organized the event, so we wondered what kind of people get picked for SWAT teams.
It's not always the fastest, it's not always the biggest, it's not always the strongest. It's the guy that's the right fit. You know, I heard a guy, Kyle Lamb, talk about it with Delta Force in the U.S. Army. It's not always the best guy, but it's always the right guy. It's something about a fit. A guy's got to groove into the team. So that's as important as anything. You got to be able to differentiate hostiles versus non-hostile people instantly. You know, you make a split-second decision in law enforcement, and this is from patrolman to anybody on up. You've got to make a split-second decision, and then you've got media, you've got attorneys, you've got, families out there that are going to spend the next several years dissecting that split-second decision that you made. So it's absolutely a thinking man's game, absolutely.
It's interesting, though, these smaller departments did really well in this competition, even though they don't have as many people to draw from, right?
I want to tell you something. This year, the Clark County team, they've got a number of officers on their team that are over 40 years old, and they came and they kicked some butt. So it's not, like I said, it's not the fastest, always the fastest, it's not always the strongest, and it's not always the youngest, In events like this, experience does pay off, You slow down, you hit your targets, you score better.
You have to kind of control your excitement in a situation in which you're all keyed up. You have to learn how to, I would imagine, and that's true when you're actually working.
Sure it is. And it all comes from your training and your experience. The more times you go through a stressful situation in training, when that stressful situation happens on the street, whether it's a SWAT or a patrol operation, you're gonna, hey, I've done this before. This is a piece of cake for me. I know how to control my breathing. I know how to control my pace. And I know, I know when to push and I know when to pull. Absolutely.
Are there any women SWAT officers?
This year we had two. There were two women on, they were on the same team. But through the years, it seems like we've always had at least one female every year, and they've been on different teams. Something you might not have seen 10 or 15 years ago, more women integrating into SWAT teams. And I'm going to tell you what, if they're here, it's not because somebody told them they were going to come and be here. They want to be, and they compete just as hard as the men. With SWAT, we're all the same color, man. We do this, and it doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman. You just have to be able to do the job regardless, of your sex or your age. That's why I love watching the old guys come out here and do this, because they can still compete.
One of the best-known teams is the hostage rescue team from the FBI.
Right.
Are there teams like that you go, these are the guys who went to the Super Bowl, and you...
There are individual officers on, the teams that have competed here that you can look at and know those guys are a special kind of physical freak. As far as the
that's funny to hear you say that.
Yeah.
You mean, what would be an example of that kind of?
There's a guy who, he wasn't here this year, but in the past, he's a SWAT officer from the Indiana State Police Central Team. And we always compare him when he runs the obstacle course. He'll run it in a minute and 40 seconds, whereas it takes most really fast and fit guys, like 2.5 minutes. I mean, fast, strong, fit guys. And he blows it out of the water. And the way we always compare him is like saying he's the difference between like a true Division I, you know, NCAA athlete and a decent high school athlete. It's guys like that. You know, Lafayette's got a couple of guys. They're just freaks. They're fast, they're big, and they're strong.
As you think back in your own experience, can you remember a time where training or ability came through and turned the tide? And
I'd say there's been a lot of times in our callouts in the past where our officers were making decisions on the spot where they could have made that decision, the 180 degree opposite one, but it was what they thought was right on the scene. And it wasn't until later in the debrief you'd find out, hey, what that call you made was right. It was spot on. You know, there may be a time you want to, you know, less lethal shoot a guy with a Bing bag or something, and come to find out he may have had some kind of medical history that you didn't know about, or yeah, stuff like that happens all the time. You know, guys are making decisions, and fortunately for us, because of our training and our experience, knock on wood, we're doing the right thing out here.
Can you think of a time you felt really good because there was a good outcome?
A good day is when you go home with the same amount of holes in your body that you started with. You know, you go home to your family. With our team in particular, when we're on our way to a call out, you know, it's kind of jovial and everybody's in good spirits. But we know when we're getting close, we're within a few blocks in the SWAT truck. I mean, and I'm sure it's the same with exactly every team. You know, the switch gets turned and you go in game mode and you know what you have to do. Everybody knows their assignments. You know, you got breachers, you got flashbangers, you got guys going in point, you got guys knocking windows out, being diversionary. So everybody knows their role, and it's super important that everybody fulfills their role, because if the diversion guy doesn't get there in time, and you know, and the bad guys see the police coming to the front door instead of the side window like they're supposed to, then that compromises everybody's safety. So everybody's got a role, everybody's role is important, and then when the assignment's over and we're on our way back for a debrief, you know, it lightens back up again.
Tony Skinner, a Delaware County Sheriff's deputy who organizes the Indiana SWAT Challenge, the annual competition among police departments from across the state. They compete the same way they practice and the same way they do their jobs. Great speed and a balance between enormous physical effort and the concentration needed to make critical decisions, including when to pull the trigger. That's our show for today. I'm John Strauss. Big thanks to our producer, Marcus Jackman. Glad you could join us this time and hope you'll stay in touch. Drop me a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com if you would like more information or have a suggestion. In the meantime, thanks and have a great week. Until we meet again on the next Indiana Weekend on Indiana Public Radio, I'm John Strauss.
Indiana Weekend with host John Strauss of the Ball State Journalism Department. Our show is engineered at Indiana Public Radio, produced by Marcus Jackman. Major support for Indiana Weekend comes from Dillman's Furniture, Muncie, serving East Central Indiana with home furnishings from Flex Steel, Bassett, and Simmons Beautyrest. Join us again next week for Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.
You got to slow down, and you have to do the basic fundamental, the things you learned when you first picked up a pistol or a rifle. You got to focus on your front sight, and you have to control your breathing. When we come out here and run the O course, it's a lot different. It is full-blown, adrenaline. These guys are running up and over, and some of them are trying to just run through the obstacles.